Blog Talk Radio.
It's that time again, another episode of Sports Card Live. We take a magnifying glass to the sports card industry. News, reviews, thoughts, the occasional tangents, and free stuff. Hosted by Dan Rage, Ryan, and Doug Fresh. Boom!
Rippers and sports nuts, welcome to another edition of Sports Card Live. We did an interview with Brian Gray from Leaf coming up. Highly entertaining interview. Actually recorded it with him about 2 hours because the guy's like a Jamaican with 5 jobs. He's got so much going on. He's got all these new products coming out. But it's a very animated interview, as always, with Brian. So you guys should enjoy that coming up. And he kind of previews some of his products, talks a little other stuff about the summit. We talk about the summit, so all that's kind of coming up. And we'll also do a little bit of reviews on Museum, which came out last week, do some tribute preview, talk Olympic autos. So it's a jam-packed episode. Dan is via Vegas. What's going on, Dan?
Wow, what's going on? Just chilling, getting ready for a Britney Spears concert tonight, you know? You know you're jealous, man.
Oh, I wish I could be there, man.
I'm a man. I'm 40.
Yeah. So wish I could be there. You know, Hit Me One More Time is one of my favorite songs of all time. Could you call me on your cell phone when they're playing that song so I could actually feel like I'm there? Is that possible?
Oh, that's done already.
I'm gonna
videotape it. I'm gonna put it on YouTube. It's gonna be great.
Nice.
She has a lot of good jams though. Don't hate. There's more than just there's like I'm a Slave, there's Toxic. You know,
yeah.
it'll be entertaining, I hope.
Nice. Well, and we're also joined by Ryan. What's going on, man?
Not much. I'm not in Vegas and I'm not gonna see Britney Spears tonight. unfortunately, I guess. You know, I guess you could say that. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean it'd be interesting to see the you know, the age dynamic there. I mean, is it going to be mostly, you know, 30-40-year-old women, and then Dan by himself going to be the only dude there, or is it going to be tweenies? You know, you should report back on that. Let us know.
There's going to be a lot of guys bringing their girlfriends. There's going to be a lot of guys, like, you know, beer in hand, looking around, just going, "Oh God, what did I get myself into?" I'll be that guy. But I also think the demographic is going to be a little bit older than people would expect. Like, right now, there's tons of older people in Vegas. You don't see, like, a lot of the college crowd for the most part. I think that usually is springtime, maybe summertime. But right now, it's kind of the older demographic in Vegas.
Nice. And you're doing old timey Vegas. How's the Fremont Street Strip looking?
Fremont Street is it's rock and roll, man. I love that place. It's like everybody's favorite dive bar times a million.
Hmm.
So yeah, it's a good spot. Some interesting people for sure. But
nice
stuff.
Well, I haven't really been watching the Olympics too much, but I did notice that Topps, I think it came out a couple weeks ago, came out with an Olympic set, a Winter Olympics 2014 set, and some of these autos are really popping on the secondary market. I've seen a Merle Davis sell for $300. She's a figure skater. Ted Ligety 101 sold for $400. And if you haven't seen the cards yet, you know, we rip on Topps, but they actually kind of look like an Inception kind of looking card. It's a sticker autograph, of course, but it's not a bad looking card. And people are, you know, collecting their favorite Olympian here, and it's an interesting set. Ryan, have you seen any of these cards or seen any of the 2014 Winter Olympics set?
Only a little bit. You know, I haven't kept track of it too much. I think they did pretty good on the Summer Olympics cards that came out a little while ago and during the Summer Games. But I don't know that much about the Winter Olympic cards. I have been watching curling though. So that's I should pick up some of that. They probably have some curlers in that set. I should pick them up.
Yeah, it looks
watch
like it's
Russian women's team, telling you. Hotness.
Woo. Yeah.
Hotness.
Do they come with underarm hair as well, like relics, or no?
Ooh. I don't know, man. I don't think they're well manicured in Russia. Thank you.
Well, it looks like it's a three hits every box, and you get one autograph, and they're U.S. Olympic autographs, and then two U.S. Olympic team relic or commemorative relic cards. So one event that's just, like, crazy to me, I think we talked about this off-air, is the frickin' skeleton. I actually watched that the other day, and that is absolutely, like, ridiculous. I mean, the their chin is, like, a half an inch away, and they're going like 80 miles an hour, 100 miles an hour. It's like, that's nuts, man. I give props to any skeleton contestants in that thing, man. That stuff is crazy.
Well, you watch them take turns, and they actually hit the edge and they hit the sides.
Yeah,
they're going like 80. How do you not just like nick the side a little bit and just like start rolling over? I mean, it's insane.
Yeah. That's well, that one
there's
guy back
pretty,
in the guy in
there's
the
a pretty
the lap.
Brutal there's a brutal crash, like bobsledding crash that happened like a day or two ago, where like the bobsled actually flipped over, and I don't know how bad the person got hurt, but yeah, it was pretty brutal.
Huh? Yeah, I didn't hear about that. Unfortunately, I haven't had a lot of time to watch the Olympics. I seem to watch them, you know, right before I go to bed or something, and I watched the figure skating. There was a guy from Russia who was like a legend. Like, he's 31 and he's won gold medals prior, and he was like their biggest celebrity, and he had gotten back surgery, and he went out there and he tried it in warm-ups. He re-hurt himself and he had to kind of bow out, and everybody gave him a standing O. So I watched that, but I haven't had a chance to watch a whole lot of Olympics. So I need to catch up and do my country a service, I guess, and watch the Olympics.
Been good.
So.
USA beat the Russians.
Yeah.
In hockey.
Well,
so
TJ
I think the gold medal game is coming up on Thursday, if I'm not mistaken, against Canada.
Huh.
So.
Yeah, I know that they. Maybe I'm not familiar with shootouts in hockey, but I know once they go through five guys, they can have the same guy just keep going, and that's what happened with TJ Oshie. I guess he went four times in a row. Does that happen? Is that in real hockey? Can you do? I mean, real hockey.
I don't.
In NHL, can you do that?
Real hockey.
Real hockey.
Not that fake Olympic hockey, but real hockey. You know, like the NHL. No, I think I don't think I think in the NHL you have to go through your whole roster. I don't think you can have somebody else come in. I don't think you can shoot twice. I think you keep on going with your whole roster until it actually overlaps when everybody has had a chance. So I think there's also some different rules in Olympic hockey. Also, like the ice, I think, is either longer or wider or something. I know it's a bigger ice surface.
Hmm.
So there's like a couple differences in Olympic hockey and regular hockey, normal.
Hockey normal. So, yeah, it's pretty cool, Olympics. And I wanted to get into talking about Tribute. They actually, Beckett posted some preview shots of Tribute. It actually looks pretty good. I'm surprised. They're not doing the encased hits. Now, this is Tribute Baseball I'm talking about now. I'm switching over to baseball. It's coming out on Friday, and they've upped the ante. There's four autos now in a box as opposed to three. So you got two relics and four autos. One of the kind of the innovations this year that I've seen, and I don't know if it's going to be only one-on-ones, but they took a game-used ball and they had a player sign on it, and then they cut it, and they made a one-on-one cut auto from a game-used ball. So that looks pretty cool. I saw a David Ortiz picture. They have the eye black again, which is obviously not game used because a lot of these guys just painted on, but they have the sticker eye black with the guy's autograph above it, which is, you know, maybe gimmicky for some, but I think it looks kind of cool. They got the bat knobs are back, and I know the big chase, they're going to be a Puig game used bat knob, which, I mean, that's probably going to be a $6,000 to $10,000 card easily. They got the batting gloves back. They kind of changed the font. It's kind of more, I don't even know how to what to call the font, but it's definitely more modern looking. So it's interesting. And one thing I did notice, and I want to get your guys' take on this, they have on-card autos of Mark McGwire, Jose Canseco, and Rafael Palmeiro.
Good. No Sosa, huh?
I don't see Sosa on the early previews, no.
Little steroid subset. I like it. Big fan. I think more companies should do it. No Barry,
well,
of course.
No Barry, because he probably charges $500 per auto. So it's probably
rightfully
why.
So.
But,
you know, when you go through all those court cases, man, you got to get that money coming in. You got to get that cash flow back. Those lawyers are expensive, man. They don't work for free.
It seemed like for the last 5 or 6 years, it was like Topps kind of stayed away from these guys. You know what I mean? You didn't see any Canseco's, McGwire, or, you know, Palmeiro. I've seen Palmeiro relics and stuff, but you never seen an auto of Palmeiro. I think it's like, is the steroid era now gone? You know, it's been long away from baseball that they're comfortable of putting these guys in. Ryan, what do you think the theory is in getting some of these guys back in products now?
That's a real good question. I think you're right. They probably did stay away or are still staying away from certain guys. I don't know if the players associate or the Major League Baseball maybe had something to do with it for a little while. I don't know why Topps would necessarily like run away from these guys. I'm sure their price has come down, as you were saying. There could be a lot of things involved, but certainly the steroids are kind of why they maybe stayed away, and now maybe people have forgiven or there's some demand from collectors. You know, I'd like to see a Bonds autograph. I think the Canseco and the McGwire and Palmeiro. It's been a while since we've seen these guys, especially in Topps.
Yeah.
So. I think it's fine. And McGuire's coaching right now. I don't know what Palmeiro's doing. Bonds is apparently training for the Tour de France or something. So, I mean, it's not like these guys are living bad, you know, a bad existence. So they took some juice, and we're still good players, irrespective of that. So, and people still want to collect their cards. I mean, that's what it boils down to. I think if they were scrubs, they wouldn't even deal with them. But people still want, you know, there's still some demand for their, who wouldn't want a Bonds or McGwire? Even if you don't like those guys, you could sell it and get something that you like. So I think it's a good thing that they're in the sets now, or bringing them back into the set.
Yeah, hopefully we'll see a Bonds auto here shortly at some point, and he'll sign for one of these guys, even if it's, you know, Leaf or Panini or something before it gets to Topps. We'll see some Bonds autos. One thing I also noticed with Tribute is, holy crap, they must have had Gary Carter sign like 5 million sticker autos, because he's in there. He's in there again. And he was also like, when you were missing a card, they were replacing certain cards with Gary Carter specially made autos. I swear to God, he must have signed 5 million freaking stickers.
Yeah, he did. He must have had like a 4-day signing session or something, because some of those replacement autographs they sent out last year were his stickers, and he's still in products. So I don't know what to think about that. You know, he's I don't even know how that works. Like, I guess if you get paid for it, you can keep putting them out into products 3, 4, 5 years later, I guess. So I guess there's nothing wrong with that. But he was a former Giant. Isn't that correct?
Yeah.
Former San Francisco Giant, among many other teams. So fan-friendly guy. So it's a shame this stuff isn't on card anymore, you know, and that we're down to stickers. So if I were a fan of his, I'd try to pick up some on-card stuff. Now that they're diluting all this stickers into the market, pick up a couple nice on-card ones, probably for real cheap, and hang on to those. You know, that's probably what I would do.
Well, and what's interesting about his sticker is it's a silver sticker, which was circa, you know, 08, 09, 10, where they used it for, like, triple threads and stuff like that. So it's a different sticker than the sticker they currently use. So you can tell that they probably had, you know, a drawer full of Gary Carters, and that they just started using them. They were kind of holding them back or whatnot. Another guy that's in tribute, Stan Musial. They got Stan Musial in there again. Talk about a guy that I think I read an article somewhere that I think he literally signed cards the day before he died for Topps.
Wow.
So, wow. And the sticker auto they showed here of Musial is real bad. His auto is real bad. It's you can't blame him. I mean, he got older, and he was probably bedridden at that point, and he's just signing these things. And, I mean, this sticker that they're showing happens to be the one-of-one version, so I don't know how many there are. There may only be one-of-one. Maybe they only had one or two stickers left. But the one-of-one version, the auto is really bad. I mean, it's just like – it just questioned. It's like, man, this guy was a legend and stuff like that, and he just still had to take – these autograph deals to probably pay for his home or whatever. It's really crazy. I mean, because he was, by the look of his auto, he was in no shape or form to be signing these autos.
Well, I mean, those guys didn't make the amount of money baseball players make today. So, I mean, he probably needed some cash.
Yeah, and it might even be to set up his family, and I guess
– yeah.
Putting myself, like, if I was to put in myself in his shoes, it's like, put everything in front of me right now and give me whatever money you can so that I can pass it along. You know, if you have kids or grandchildren or whatever it is, I could see somebody in that position be like, okay, I'm going to die here. I'm going to try to get as much money for my family as I can. It's like one of the last things you can do for them. So, I mean, I actually bought an autograph of his the other day. I'm not even sure if it's real because I kept going through all his signatures like throughout the years. And like you said, it has really changed not only as he's aged, but just, I mean, throughout his whole kind of timeline of his career, he used to have really good penmanship and then it gets real spotty sometimes. So I'm not even sure if the one I have is legit or not. I'm going to have to get it probably checked out, but that's a tough. And like you said, these later stickers that they're putting in, his autograph is so shaky, and, you know, collectors can see right through this. They're looking at it, and they're like, man, this guy was on his deathbed signing this, you know? I mean,
yeah.
I don't know how great that makes you feel.
Yeah.
Well, you can look at it and go, I hope he was signing on his own terms. I hope he was deciding that, like, I'm signing these because I'm trying to set up my family, not because I'm getting hassled by some guy at top saying that you have a contract to fill with us. We need to get these stickers done. I really hope that's not, because that goes far beyond sports cards. That's just completely, like, indecent. But hopefully it was on his own terms.
I hope so, too. Because even Hank Aaron, I mean, his is getting pretty bad. It's not like where Musial was, but if you look at some of the five-star autos of Hank Aaron, it's gotten pretty bad for Hank Aaron, too. So, you know, it's just, you know, the hand's a little shaky, you know, as it's going to happen to all of us when we get older. And, you know, especially if you've been – I mean, Hank Aaron signed a lot, especially later in life. You wonder if, you know, carpal tunnel sets in for these guys as you get older and stuff like that, and he's still signing and he's still in every product and stuff. So it's just it's crazy. Hopefully they need to figure out some kind of pension plan or something for these guys. If you know, even like Mike Trout right now or something, say the 20, 30, 40, 50 years from now, if you know, inflation goes up so much, these guys' contract doesn't, they need to set these guys up or something, you know, just to be able to take care of them if they've donated that much time to MLB. So kind of like with the football thing.
You look at, because obviously like you guys, I'm a Giants fan. And you see Cepeda autos and you see Marichal autos a lot. I mean, they're out there like crazy. And their autos are a little shaky. And you can tell, like, you know, they're getting older, and it's just it seems like with every product every year, it just gets a little worse. And, I mean, there's tons of Marichal on-card autos out there. I think there was at five star, I think, has Marichal Autos that we pulled, and like they're just like super shaky.
So. And, I mean, you get this guy who's a legend, and he has so many – I mean, that five-star auto sells for, like, $12. So – and that just kind of shows you how much he's been signing. It's not – you can get plenty of them out there on the open market. So these cards don't sell for anything. It's because he signed for – so that's, like, maybe cut – I don't know. Maybe have him do more appearances with 8x10s. Let's limit the cards down to make this guy's legacy, you know, a little bit more collectible or something. I don't know.
Well,
you know,
I mean,
it's a very
– that's dead on. That's dead on. Should a Marichal auto go for $12? No. An on-card auto for $12 of like a legend like that? Hell no. It just means that the market's completely saturated.
Yep.
They gotta figure something else out. I mean, limiting the print run is the way to go. Even if it does up the price of the boxes and whatnot, it's getting ridiculous.
Yeah, and you'll actually hear Brian talk about overproduction when the segment comes on. I did want to get into our review, and actually, surprisingly, I'm going to say it now, and I don't know, you know, with the big boys coming out for football this year, and we're talking about 2013 football products, with National Treasure still on the rise in five-star and Supreme, I'm going to declare an early winner for 2013 football product of the year, and I'm going to give it to 2013 Museum Football. Dan, do you agree?
I like the silence. I'm going to go with, man, football product of the year, huh?
That's what I'm saying right now.
How about best football product ever?
Well, that's a stretch.
I don't know. I mean, okay, how about the best football product in the last 3 years?
I would prefer limited for the price point, limited,
Okay, so how about the best mid to high-end price point in the last 3 years? Limited's like $100 a box. Can't really consider that like high-end. But if you were to compare a box of that to you could either open up three boxes or four boxes of Museum or one box of 2012 National Treasures.
Yes.
You're going to get better value out of the four boxes.
Yes.
I mean, we opened up, what, 5-6 cases? And I think out of all the cases, we only opened up about one or two dud boxes. Every box had a good hit.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, and to be honest, they didn't really change baseball. They kept the same format, it's the same design and everything, on-card autos. But I think what this market, this 2013 football market, had lacked was the veterans and the legends. They just didn't put it in. I mean, they obviously used all their money on the rookie premier guys, and they were going through all those stickers, both Topps, Panini combined, and there just was the lack of vets. I mean, some products had vets. You go through a case of certified football, you'd get one vet hit a case. I mean, there was like that one guaranteed vet hit. But, I mean, you're talking about one or two vet hits per box with Museum. I mean, Joe Montana on card, Peyton Manning on card, Marcus Allen on card, Bo Jackson on card, Peyton Manning, and they're live cards. They're not redemptions. They're not a blue promise note. These cards are live, which is just – it's crazy. For 2013 to have this much content and it all be live was just amazing to me. Oh, they also have Andrew Luck autos in there, Terrell Davis, Ronnie Lott, dual auto of Kurt Warner and your boy, why am I drawing a blank on his name right now?
Marshall Faulk.
That was a redemption, but Eli Manning live, a sticker auto, though. Troy Aikman's a redemption, yep. So.
But, I mean, dude, they also have, like, I mean, Terrell Davis was in there.
Yeah,
I mean,
yep.
they picked out some guys that you don't see in every product. And and a lot of it was just on-card autos, and they really delivered. I mean, the product really delivered.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, they, you know, there's no Ryan Swope. There's no 6th, 7th round auto. They kept it to the rookie premier guys for the rookie-based hits. But they also made them kind of harder to attain. So the rookie hits are actually more scarce. So I think I see some EJ Manuals that are numbered to 25 selling for over 100, which – in other products, they weren't. So, I mean, it could be early still, and that's why. But I think they just did a great job of you know, and we see, we're honest. We bash on Tops consistently, but, you know, they put out a winner, and we're going to let you know that this was a winner of a product. And I think what it was, what helped it be a great product was they didn't make too much of it. The pre-orders weren't that high because people had opened all the other stuff, like the limiteds and the playbooks and all the stuff from 2013, the Topps Prime, which tanked. And when this came up for pre-order, people were like, nah, it's 2013 football. It's going to be released after the season. Nobody's going to buy it. I don't want it. They made less of it. Most cards are all 99 and under, lots of numbered, low numbered hits. I think we hit like 6 or 7 numbered to 10 or less in a case, hits. And it's like, that's proof in the pudding. If you make a shorter print run, you don't dilute the product down, you have a good product. That should be a model that they follow for years to come.
Well, we were talking about this before, because the pre-orders were so low, probably, Topps probably lost money on museum football.
Could be.
They probably lost money on it. With all the on-card autos they put in there, with all the value they put in there, they probably lost money. They probably made the most money on, like, a Topps Magic.
Yeah.
Where it was all sticker autos, it was, like, undrafted free agents, just guys, just who's and never heard of them's and all those guys, they probably made the most money on that. So
yeah,
you look at Topps Museum and you go, next year, because this one was so solid, the pre-orders are going to be through the roof.
Well,
so what is Topps going to do?
Yeah.
So what? And plus, like, not even taking next year's rookie class into consideration, what is going to happen? Well, Topps is going to go, we have pre-orders of 400, 500 cases. Let's make 700 cases. Well, now that product is going to suck. They're going to water it down. There's going to be a huge print run, and it's going to devalue the whole line. So this may be a one and done. I don't know if they're going to do it next year. We'll see. But if they do, they're going to make a shit ton more of it.
Yeah. Yeah, so, I mean, it's probably one of the best reviews we've given any football product this year. So props to Topps on this one. So wanted to move on. We're just about ready to get into our segment with Brian, but I was scouring the internet for stories and stuff, and I saw something interesting. ITG, which is, you know, predominantly known for their hockey products, they're actually coming out with a new baseball product again. If you guys remember them from a couple years back, they did a Heroes and Prospect baseball product, which actually had some Trout, decent value for 5 hits. Kind of takes the Brian Grace approach where it's all hits, no base cards. Well, they've kind of innovated this thing of getting away from sticker autos. Have you seen the story out there, Ryan, about the sticker autos, how they're doing them now?
No, I haven't.
Well, what you're going to have to see it. So search, and I'll explain this to you guys out there the best I can. If you look up ITG, I think their blog is prezsays.wordpress.com, and I believe it's Brian Price, who's the owner of ITG's blog. So basically, they took a background of a card, and they made a sticker out of the background. So they had Cal Ripken. I see Cal Ripken Jr. here. So when the sticker's put on the card, it looks like an on-card auto because it has the same exact background and everything. So we'll have to see them once they come live, but they're trying to help out with, you know, noticeable stickers and stuff like that other companies do. And it looks pretty cool. They got Cal Ripken, David Ortiz, Jonathan Gray. The set's called Past, Present, and Future. And, you know, we don't buy too many ITG products, but I might have to buy a couple boxes of this to see what these actually look like. So it's kind of an innovative way for hiding a sticker that I have not yet seen with other companies.
It does look interesting. I'm looking at the pictures now. He says it's a 3-piece autograph card.
Yeah.
I see the 2 pieces. I'm not seeing the 3rd piece.
Yeah, I don't see the 3rd piece either, but you can see that you can still see the outline of the sticker, but it blends into the background much better.
This is pretty interesting. I kind of like this I kind of like that. You know, there's got to be some kind of technology. I always thought, well, why don't they just sign like a blank card first and then you know, digitally enhance some kind of image on the card after or something.
Right.
I mean, it just seems like something like that's possible. I hate to hear, oh, it's not possible, and then I'm looking and they're blasting people in outer space every day. So it's like, you know, how could something like this not – this does look interesting. I'm going to have to read – I'm trying to read and talk at the same time, so I'll have to read about that later. But that's pretty – that's unique, more unique than, Gary Carter stickers. I'll have to say that. So.
Oh, and actually, Trevor.
That's a good point, though. That's a good point. The technology is out there to basically sign a blank card stock, and then basically design the card around that.
Yeah.
Like the technology is there. Like, why don't I? That's a great idea, Ryan. I mean, I don't. Why haven't Top? What's up with Top? Why haven't they figured that out? Or
I know. Yeah. You will have some user errors, have we seen on other sets where guys just don't know how to sign because, let's face it, they got through high school and college by their sports, programs. But, so they'll sign probably not where they're supposed to, but I guess maybe do cut autos of those or whatnot. But, yeah, that's interesting. We'll hope maybe somebody will innovate that later on. Trevor brought up a good point. I actually saw it on your guys' Twitter feed. About Panini buying Twitter followers?
Oh, for sure. Without question. I'll probably go through their little list at some point and, it'll be the same girl, thumbnail. It's amazing how many hot, kind of X-rated women they have, blowing kisses at you at their Twitter feed. It'd be very hard to... I don't want to speculate on why they're doing it. It could be an ego stroke. It also could be they're probably trying to sell the company right now with the build-up to the World Cup. The American business is a really small percentage of what they do. They have a lot of distribution into comics. The soccer stickers obviously are kind of what they're known for overseas, so that's a huge percentage of their business. I think the soccer stickers alone are 70% of their total collectibles business. So that leaves like 30% for maybe the American cards that they make. So they're trying to sell that business, actually. They've got apparently a couple guys on the hook for it dating back to last year, and they should see a real good revenue boost. So what I think is they're just trying to make this company look really good. Look, we have 100,000 followers on our – give me a break. Like 100
– did they jump up in a couple days?
For real – Oh, they jumped up huge. They went to like 10,000 to 60,000 in no time, and then to 60,000 to 100,000 really quick.
Wow.
And you can just scroll through. You see the same profile pictures coming up every time. And it's not like card, Joe Blow card collectors following. It's, Missy XXX is following it. And you can go to Fiverr and just buy followers. You could buy however, and you can buy 25,000 followers right now for $5, and in an hour you'll have 25,000 followers. They're not going to read what you're having to say. They're not going to engage with you. It's all basically fake kind of thing. That's why I wouldn't invest in Twitter right now, to just spin this off in a totally different direction. I mean, when they say how many users they have, 70% of them could be fake. So
right.
I wouldn't even touch that company right now because that's all fake users. I think you're vetted more on Facebook. I would look more at Facebook likes or Facebook, that, because I think it's a little harder to create a fake Facebook account, whereas Twitter, shoot, I've got 5 Twitter accounts that I,
right,
switch back and forth from. So they definitely don't believe anybody's followers on Twitter. Don't believe it, especially
yeah.
in the card community, because you can just do some giveaways and blast your followers. You could buy them, whatever you want. You could just create 1,000 accounts and follow yourself, and then boom, you've got 1,000 followers. So, and there's no real repercussion. Yeah, so they're definitely fake. Why they're doing it, I don't know. I think it's probably just an ego stroke, but it could be something different than that. It could be that they're just trying to make themselves look good. So
make
themselves look better than Tops and stuff, and Upper Deck.
I noticed the fake Twitter followers when we actually first started. It was probably our first year of break in like 2011, and there was another competitor, Breaker, that had like 50,000 followers all of a sudden. And I'm like, oh, come on. And so then I did a little research on it, and I saw that you could buy, you know, 30,000 and they'll deliver them to you in like 3 days or something like that. And then it's like $60 or something like that, or $50 for 30,000 followers. So, yeah, you could definitely do that. So if you want to look like you're popular amongst your friends, go ahead and drop $50 and you could all of a sudden have, you know, 50 to 100,000 followers. So crazy.
What's this site again?
Was it Fiverr? Fiverr?
Fiverr. Fiverr. Go to Fiverr. You can get anything for $5.
I think my personal Twitter has like, I think I have like 3 or 4 followers. I think I'm going to have like 50,000 by the end of the week. I'm going to be like,
there you go.
Super popular. Super popular.
Dude,
bro.
Just go big or go home. Why don't you get like 20 million or something?
I should.
Just like try to break records, like the most, like have more than like Kanye or something. Just you know, have more followers than or the president. You know,
I'm gonna be the only guy with 50,000 followers who's never done a Twitter post.
Shoot, came up. Well, I know you guys have all been waiting for the Brian Gray interview. I actually interviewed him about 2 hours ago, and it's a really fun, entertaining segment from Brian. You know how outspoken he is, and you know he gives his opinion on his products, the summit. So we're going to go ahead and get into that and play that for you guys, and I'll be kind of hanging around the chat if you guys want to chat about it. And so I'm going to put all you guys on hold so you guys can listen, and I'm going to go ahead and start the interview, and we'll be right back after that to talk about it. So here you go. All righty, we are joined by Brian Gray from Leave Trading Cards. We're excited to have him on the show. The man needs no introductions. As you guys know that do breaks with Mojo Break, we've been doing a ton of his products, so we're excited to have him on the show. Brian, how's it going?
Doing great. Just busy. You know, football, we have our football products coming out. You know, the first product actually releases next Friday, Metal Football. And, I mean, it's a record to get out a product like this in February. It really is unheard of in the hobby. So that requires us to put every bit of attention we have into getting these products done.
Definitely. Tell us a little. I mean, I was going to ask you what's new and exciting for Leaf, but let's go right into the 2014 football stuff and tell us a little bit about the three products, the Trinity, the Metal, and the Originals that's coming out.
Well, basically, let me give you the big picture of our products. The exciting thing for Leaf is the only draft company to have every major offensive skill position player of note, every key player. I say this because each company, for one reason or another, it seems like each company missed or did not sign certain people. And I know on our relaunch website, which relaunches next week, that's my first blog post is about what we owe collectors with respect to a checklist. But the great thing is Leaf has everybody. Manziel, Bridgewater, McCarron, Carlos Hyde, Trey Mason, Sammy Watkins, Mike Evans, pretty much Jadeveon Clowney, pretty much every significant player that is in this draft is in Leaf football. What's interesting is there's one company that did not sign Clowney or McCarron, which is a pretty big miss.
Yeah.
Another company did not sign Johnny Manziel.
Wow.
Now, I don't know how you're going to come out with a draft product without Johnny Manziel.
No kidding.
You know? But they are coming. There's one company that doesn't have Manziel, Lake Seastrunk. I'm trying to think who else. Andre Williams. I mean, there's another Charles Sims, a lot of key guys. And then another company missed out on Sammy Watkins, Allen Robinson. I mean, like middle range, good skill position guys. So all the companies have holes except for Leaf. We're a solid rock, and it really has turned into great sales for these products for us. We're sold out on every release. And we have a waiting list of hundreds of cases for every item. So I think that's going to give customers some confidence that there's not much extra product in the marketplace. Now, with that being said, Metal Football is really exciting. Just because, first off, I think it's the best design we've ever had. The cards are stunning. You know, we got rid of Metal. Like last year's Metal Football, I think there were regular Metal autographs. Now our lowest level is what a lot of people call refractors. We call them prismatics.
Right.
So every card in the box is prismatic now. So, you know, because I didn't think the cards popped enough when they weren't the refractor type, you know, prismatic finish. And that rainbow finish makes all the difference, and to me takes the product to the next level, not having any plain old silver chromish metal cards. So I think from an aesthetic standpoint, the product looks awesome. great checklist, but not a bunch of junk.
Right.
I mean, again, when I talk to agents, because we're assigning people for our products, they were throwing out all these names that other companies are signing. You know, I know Upper Deck has like a 200-player checklist, which is great if you're looking for some obscure lineman from Wisconsin, but not great if you're looking for value. Because when you only get so many hits in a box, you know, our worst hit is a drafted skill position guy like a Silas Redd. What's a USC? I mean, there's upside there. I mean, he's a running back at USC. I mean, that's okay. So that's the kind of – that's our low-end cards in our release. We only have 60 – I believe it's 60 or so players on our checklist. So it's very much lean, mean, fight, machine, best names. So when a customer opens boxes or cases, there's a heavy concentration of the top 10 guys. So, I mean, you're going to get a heavy concentration of those guys. You know, I don't know what the exact numbers are, how often Mansell comes, but it's almost one a case. McCarron's almost one a case. They're all, every player is pretty much almost one a case. So you're going to get good, solid value. You know, there's four cards in a box, all pretty much good, solid schools. We try not to take kids from, you know, Towson or very unusual schools that don't have good collector bases. We tried to really focus on making sure we had the kids from Alabama, Oregon, you know, the major schools that people collect. So it's going to be a fun break. We'll have the full checklist on the website, I believe, Friday.
Nice.
And this Friday. And then next Friday is when the product releases. So I think for breakers out there, there's going to be a lot of different ways to slice and dice this one. You know, whether it's, you know, player drafts or college. I mean, there's all kinds of ways this is going to go down. It's going to be very exciting, I think. But it's metal technology. You know what you're getting. It's beautiful cards. Great checklist. All on card. You know, with the exception of a bonus we added, which is Teddy Bridgewater Masterworks autographed sketch cards.
Wow.
With logos pictured on the cards where the artist put the college logos in there. And they're stunning. They're very rare. But I think based on the success of Masterworks last year, we know people like those autographed sketch cards, so we're bringing Bridgewater autographed sketch cards into this release. So that's very exciting. You know, Originals Football, I'll keep this one briefer since it's a little ways away. It comes out at the end of next month. It basically, I don't know if you've ever seen our Originals Wrestling product from a year and a half ago.
I have.
But it's 1948 Leaf themed, except we throw in 1960 Leaf, which was another classic Leaf set. So some players are featured on 48 Leaf cards. Some players are featured on 60 Leaf cards. It's all on card. You get a fifth autograph in the box. You're getting a little more value from a number of hit standpoint, but it's not metal, obviously. But it's exciting, I think, nonetheless. People are going to love the love that old on-card feel. Same great player selection, some new players thrown in, so I think the checklist expands a little bit to 70 for that release. But the guys we added are first-round guys who are not in skill positions. So in metal, we don't include Justin Gilbert, you know, who's going to be a first-round pick. We don't put a guy, we didn't put him in metal, but we did put him in originals.
Right.
So you're going to have a chance to get a few more guys like that in originals. And then once again, we're bringing a special bonus element. Last year it was a hot rookie redemption that was good for a Manziel autographed sketch card. I'm sure everybody remembers that.
Of course, yes.
But this year it's a hot rookie redemption, but it's something different. So again, serve no wine before it's time. But there's still going to be a mystery element. And I would tell you that while it may not be a card, it'll be something significant of a significant player when there's nothing else out there on that player. So it'll be an interesting item. So that's a fun element that's added to originals. Again, small print run, already sold out. And I guess the one that's the no-brainer of the whole group is Trinity. That brand has just become a monster.
Yeah.
I mean, people love the patches. You know, they love the inscription cards and the pure cards, I think, to me, are epic hot cards. I think they look phenomenal. They're clean. They grade well, which you would think for a glass card, they wouldn't grade well. But all the way around, all three elements, and that's why I call it Trinity, because I thought of, you know, from my religious background, the Father, the Son, and the Holy Ghost. And I was thinking, what are the Father, Son, and Holy Ghost of trading cards? And to me, it's technology, inscriptions, and patches.
Absolutely.
That's the Father, Son, and Holy Ghost. So I thought, that's it. Trinity. It's the Trinity. That's what you want. It's perfect. It's all the elements. So, you know, I had to think of the three, you know, the three key elements, and that's where I came up with Trinity. But I think the product is going to deliver. The biggest change from last year is that last year the patch cards were not autographed. This year they are.
Nice.
So now the autographs are the patches are signed. And again, the rookie class is so much better across the board. I think any company can throw, you know, could throw darts at a wall and hit a good target on this on these products because the draft class is so strong. But I don't think we mailed it in. We made sure to get all the key guys and made a quality product. So I think we have a chance of really seeing some major success with these three releases.
Yeah, I mean, and that's what we've seen with, and I was going to ask you on Collation, because, I mean, even with your Leaf Metal Baseball, which is just, you can't even get it anywhere, every box that we opened would have like a Bryant, a Pell, a Breu, and it's like, you know, you deal with the other manufacturers and you'd never get that kind of value in every single box. So is there like a, you know, a man behind that hand collates everything and makes sure that every box has value, or what's the strategy to that?
Well, we do hand collate everything, which is one of the great things about not doing a pack product. Again, I have no problem with what, you know, Press Passage, Upper Deck do. Those are perfectly fine products. And for some collectors, those base cards really have a nice value. You know, and those kind of products, we do have a product that's available at Target and Walmart in football. That's a lower end product, $19.99 a box with two autographs in every box that collectors can go to if they want that kind of product.
Right.
But I think for us in the hobby, we focus on just the hits. And so when we do that, we're able to really hand collate the products, number one, which is critical. But we have someone who's very, very knowledgeable about the value of cards doing that.
Yeah. That's
critical because you need someone who knows the top hits, and they have to know that, you know, this guy's base card is better than this guy's number to 10.
Right.
So when they figure out the box hits, a lot of companies will say, well, if it's number to 5, that's a box hit.
Right.
Well, if that card is Lewis Nix, that shouldn't be a box hit.
Right.
You know, maybe number to 5, but not number to 10, he should not be a box hit.
Right.
So it would be much better to have a Manziel base auto be a box hit over a Lewis Nix. No, we're not picking on Lewis, he's a great prospect, but a Lewis Nix number to 5.
Right.
So that's how I basically build the collation loops, and then we have someone who oversees those loops, and if they see anomalies or things that don't work, if my collation mix puts too many of a guy in a case or leads to getting doubles or, you know, we try not to do that, so we'll alter the system. But I think, again, we have a good person that does that, and then we have the people who actually package the products do not know cards. That's what allows us to have the randomization of cases. So the person who packs it doesn't know who's getting what. You know, they basically put the cases together. Then it gets packaged, and then it goes out. So it puts a nice check and balance system in place, you know, to make sure that it's not like the person who's collating can go, ooh, this is a good case. Let's put that aside for Joe Bob Smith, you know.
Right.
It doesn't work like that. We have multiple people in the food chain to make sure that doesn't happen. But again, our collation is phenomenal. And I think the biggest thing is when you sign all the best players, you're going to have good box hits every box.
Right.
And that's the case in this draft. There's more than 12 good players in this draft. You know, and then you add 101 to the guys that are in the next tier down. You know, I wouldn't feel bad getting a Lake Seastrunk Super, you know?
Yeah, of course.
or getting an Andre Williams from Boston College, who was a Heisman finalist, number to 5.
Right.
And I consider those guys one step down even from the top 12.
Yep.
That's scary how good the checklist is. And so that's going to lead to more and more box hits. And I think it's one of those products where even the third, you know, it's kind of like Sports Heroes, where it seemed like almost every card in the box was good.
Yes.
That's how this is going to feel. Because there's too many good players in this year's football draft, which has led to higher prices. You know, our cost to buy autographs is higher this year than in any year ever. But I think it's worth it for the value that we're able to provide to make sure we have every great player and not skimp and save to try to fatten our wallets by leaving out a Jadeveon Clowney or an A.J. McCarron or whoever.
Right. Yeah, I mean, Sports Heroes, I mean, that's another product that I can't keep on the shelf. I mean, we'll open up boxes and we'll have, you know, Cal Ripken, Ricky Henderson, John Smoltz, and then ended off with a Sugar Ray Leonard. And it's like, I mean, that value, that's like better than a 5-star box by tenfold. I mean,
and it's a quarter of the price, you know?
Right, exactly. It's phenomenal. Every box we do, it's like phenomenal, the value that you could put in with these guys. It really kind of puts a black eye on some of these other guys. It's like, you know, you're doing 5-star and you got these number to 333 autos and it's like $350 a box. It's crazy that you can do that, you know?
And I'll tell you, my thing is, and you may laugh, but I feel like I'm a steward of my customers' money.
Yep.
My customers spend money with me, and it's my job to spend that money the best way possible to deliver a good experience. And so when I spend that money, I don't spend it like it's just money someone dropped in front of me and said, hey, go buy autographs. A lot of these companies just go buy autographs. They call up an agent. Whatever the agent says, they pay. You know, we really are thoughtful about who we do autograph deals with because I don't want to pay $100 for an autograph that's going to sell for $38.
Right.
And trust me, it happens every day. I can run down a list of autographs that these companies pay, you know, $100 plus or $50, and they sell for $12. You know, That's not okay. Paul O'Neill, they pay $30 to $50 an autograph. He sells for $12. To me, that's not smart. And it's bad enough when we pay $5 to someone that sells for 99 cents on eBay. But I think that's a whole separate issue with people letting it rip. But, you know, to me, we have to try to spend that money smart. And so we work with players that we can get pricing where we feel like we're delivering positive value to the customer. Because if I pay $100 for an autograph and it only sells for $30, how are you going to get good value out of that product?
Right.
You're just not, because I've already wasted $70 of your money getting that autograph.
Yep.
You know, and then by the time the dealer marks it up and people who deserve to make a profit in the food chain do, there's no chance for you to come out. But if I can buy that autograph that sells for $30, for $17, or $20, then
right.
I can provide the value that gives people a fighting chance. And that's what we built Leaf on, as being the fighting chance company.
Yeah, definitely. And it's showing through. And you know, you guys had a phenomenal run of products. I mean, ever since you began. But last year was just like with Trinity. Trinity Baseball was just, I mean, the patches that were just unbelievable with the on-card autos of Buxton and Correa and Abreu and stuff like that that was coming out of this stuff. It was just, people were just, am I actually watching a product being busted with this thick of patches in it? It was just, it was insane, and you can't even buy it anywhere now, and it's...
Well, see, and what we did is, with that, we made a very simple change. We took out all the $1 autograph guys that are so common in draft products and replaced them with Buxton, Correa, Tavares, you know, all these guys, Tawan Walker, all these guys that were a year out, Archie Bradley, these guys that were a year old. I mean, it wasn't rookie cards in a sense, because they had cards last year.
Right.
But we felt like a Buxton, Correa, Tavares card delivered so much more value, Sano, so much more value than these other fillers that we were replacing them with. That's what made the product work. All three products, you know, all the products, they were all made better because we replaced a lot of the cheap, highly speculative autographs with rock-solid second-year young players who still deliver great value.
Yep.
You know, and it doesn't hurt when you get lucky and you catch an Abreu, or last year, you know, Yasiel Puig. You know, it doesn't hurt to catch 2012. It doesn't hurt to get lucky and catch those Dominican players every once in a while. But if you look at this set, even this year's baseball, there were guys in there that other companies didn't have and that are going to be value drivers eventually. You just got to take a look at the checklist and think, wow, this guy must have known something. He had Puig when no one else did.
Right.
You know, and we hope that we're able to continue to bring names out where you scratch your head and say, how'd they do that?
Yeah, and it's one of the only products that have actually Puig live autos. There's very few of them out there.
Oh, absolutely.
So.
And that way, and ours was well before no one else even had them at all.
Right.
Never mind, not live autos. They had no stickers even.
Yeah.
I think even when they put the redemptions in their boxes, some of these companies didn't have a deal with them. I don't even know. You know, so again, we just try to be forward thinking, try to come up with guys other companies don't get or can't get. And I think, like you said, we've been on a roll, but we don't get cocky about it and say, we're on a roll, let's start making a bunch of money on people. We're more of the mindset of we're looking at this as a long-term race. If you sprint, you're going to be out of gas after about a mile if you're lucky. For me, probably a quarter of a mile. But you'll be out of gas quick if you sprint. But if you jog, we're looking at this as a marathon plus. So
right.
We just got to take our time, come out with great products, don't get greedy. And I think if we do that right, we're going to continue to make inroads because people are getting more and more sick of what they've, you know, the status quo.
Yes.
And fortunately, what we've done has impacted what some of the other companies have done. We've seen some improvements in some of their products as a result of what we do. That's all we can do.
Yep.
Make great products, hope other people respond, because in the end, the consumer is the winner.
Yep. And you absolutely need competitors, too. I mean, it's going to make everybody better and, you know, be better for the end consumer. So
that's what we hope. Now, the leagues don't make it easy when baseball and basketball give exclusives. And, you know, who knows if these other leagues will eventually or not. But, I mean, that's not healthy for the consumer.
Right.
So that kicks me into overdrive and tells me I've got to work extra hard to deliver value to impact, you know, those marketplaces.
Now, I wanted to, you know, your buyback products have been phenomenal. And you got one that kind of is intriguing that's coming out that nobody's ever done with the unopened Best of Football 2014. Tell us a little bit about that product.
I mean, I'll tell you, it's a wild card product. I've always been hesitant to do it. But my thought process is, and we've proven this again and again, when I first started repacking cards, in the end, it's not like I created this category. Just Miners actually was the first company to repack memorabilia with their baseballs back in the old days.
Hmm.
They did like just memorabilia, where you could pull an autographed baseball out of a pack.
Right.
Well, all those concepts that they did and TriStar did, I thought, you know what? Why aren't we doing with this with cards? Because I believe I can make it a more fun experience than any new trading card can be just opening a licensed product today, a 2013 product.
Right.
I can make something much more exciting with a repack. And so this is an evolution on that program. We basically say, okay, what else do people collect that we can make a pack opening experience? So then we did footballs, football jerseys. We did mini helmets. We did full-size helmets. People loved all those products.
They do.
Every one of them was great. This year we took a major risk and went with autographed 8x10 celebrity photos.
Mm-hmm.
People love that.
They do.
A couple years ago we did golf balls. So we continue to find ways. That proves to me people will buy sealed boxes of golf balls. That tells me they're hungry for a pack opening experience that's unique.
Yes.
Legend of the Lynx. You got scorecards used on the PGA Tour. With Tigers, I mean, they're ridiculous.
Yes.
So, again, so a natural progression is, what else is collectible and has value that you can package? And I thought, you know what? Sealed boxes have value. Some people will never go buy the 2000 Contenders football for $500 a box, or 05 Exquisite for whatever the number is, 550 or whatever, you know, these high-priced boxes. But, you know what? If they have a shot at a more modest price of hitting that and or good cut signature card, with minimal downside, because the open box inside has good value, it has some value anyway,
sure,
and is really liquid. We thought it was an interesting experience, you know, knowing that the worst box, you know, a customer will lose money. I mean, that's how every product is. On the worst box, you're not going to make money. But overall, we felt like the risk profile was much safer than many of our repack products, because you know, our repack products is high risk, high reward. You know, high risk, high reward, and you know, a lot of our repack products are. You can have a box that doesn't yield monster value, but you have the chance at exceptional upside far beyond anything else in the marketplace.
Absolutely.
And so that's what we think most of our repack products is. This is kind of an in the middle. You take away the upside, because obviously there's no sealed box of football that goes for $4,000, but you take away some of the upside about making the best items $600, $700, $800 items, but you take away the downside a lot too, because the item is priced very competitively.
Sure.
So we think that's an exciting item. It's a test. If it does well, we will obviously follow it up with basketball, hockey, and baseball. At some point, maybe Magic the Gathering will have its own repack item. I don't know. We're looking down that line and saying, what else is collectible? Once you guys tell us with your wallet you don't want the item, we're not going to make it anymore.
Yeah, I think
we're going to say you voted.
I think this product's going to do well. I mean, I guess the conspiracy mind would say, or no, is the box going to be live? And if
the boxes are all live.
Okay, is there going to be different sizes of boxes and things like that?
Okay, so what we've done is we've already acquired a lot of the product that goes in there. We've measured the dimensions, and the box will hold a box much larger than some of the boxes are. We've looked at the biggest dimensions, and that's the size of the box.
Gotcha.
Your box plus your cut signature card, you know, you get a Legends of Football cut signature or History of Football cut signature. They'll be bubble-wrapped inside the box to reduce movement, which will help with some of the guessing games.
Right.
You know, people guessing what box is in there. If there's tons of movement, if we just threw a box in a box and you could shake it and it flew everywhere, you know that it's something like 07 Upper Deck Premier Football, or you would know that it's not National Treasures or Exquisite.
Right.
You know, you would know that. We've done some things to help level the playing field. There will probably be boxes you can pick up and say that's not going to be a National Treasures. But we've also bought boxes that allow that some of the biggest hits, like 2000 Contenders, you know, or 1998 SPA, you know, those weigh about the same as some of the lighter boxes of today.
Right.
So it just depends on the box. You know, you just don't know. And we think that the way we're packaging it is going to reduce a lot of the, you know, guessing games around it. But again, when a customer buys this, you know, by the case, or the distributor, or the dealer buys it by the case, that eliminates a lot of the guesswork also.
Nice.
Because then you know it says it was. If you're doing a box break through the website, you can say we're starting kind of the boxes from the upper left, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, so that no one's even touched the box before you break into the case. You know, it's going to be an interesting experience. Again, I'm with you. It's going to be I don't even know how it's going to do. I don't know how the product will do. I think it will be successful. My only thing I hate is that I don't think a lot of these companies deliver strong value in their products.
Right.
So my biggest fear, you know, if someone buys my box and they open the box inside, they get the typical terrible value some of these companies have delivered. And we've tried to avoid some of the most atrocious products to make sure we don't deliver those.
Right.
But, I mean, I'm looking at a table here right now. I see, like, 05 Exquisite Football, which – but even 05 Exquisite, you can open that and not do well.
Right.
But my thought is that a collector who pulls that can, A, either go sell the box for a premium value.
Mm-hmm.
If the customer doesn't like the item, they can always sell the item. It's very easy to sell wax.
Oh, definitely.
There's always someone excited to crack it. So that gives you a nice out if you don't like the item. But if you like the item, in some cases, on the premium items, it gives you a chance to open a box you probably wouldn't have bought otherwise that's worth more. You might not have spent $250 for a box of, you know, 07 Bowman Sterling football, you know, with Peterson. You might not have spent that normally.
Right.
So now you're going to get a shot at that at a cheaper buy-in, you know?
Well, I think it's a great price point for, you know, like on a major online retailer is already pre-selling it about $167. So really there's compared to other stuff, I think it's a very low risk, and it's a very kind of fun and exciting what are you going to get type of thing. So I think it's going to do well.
It is, and if it does well, to me, basketball is what's perfectly suited for this.
Yes.
Because you have much more expensive. I mean, 034 Exquisite's over $5,000 a box. So that allows for the opportunity for mega hits. You know, Flawless. I mean, the different products you could put in there.
Mm-hmm.
Now, obviously, Flawless, you have to put a cheaper box with a redemption for the Flawless. But I mean, I think there's some interesting things you can do with that. Then I really hope it works because I have some creative ideas for, you know, the other sports and then potentially even looking at non-sports, gaming, you know, other categories, comic books potentially. I mean, there could be a comic book repack, which would be very, very interesting with a graded comic.
I like that.
I mean, with a nosebleed top hit. I mean, trust me, my brain's always rolling. And so this is just a test, and if it doesn't work, we'll move on, won't do it again. If it does work and customers ask for more, we'll bring it, you know. So that's why we're successful, is because we're constantly throwing stuff against the wall to see what sticks. We make some mistakes. Fortunately, we've made less mistakes than we've had successes recently. So it makes me think we're doing the right thing.
Yeah, it shows through on how we can't keep any of your products. Now, speaking of buyback products, seems like there's been a lot of companies entering the market, and I don't know if it's because of the group breakers being, you know, placing more orders. But the only one we tend to get value out of is yours. We've tried the other ones, and we haven't even tried it on our customers. We just opened it for ourselves and went, you know, this is garbage. What do you think of the others entering the repack market?
Well, let me say this. First off, I know a lot of the people who own these companies who are starting to get into that, nice guys. I mean, one of them in particular I hold in very high regard. With that being said, the challenge is when I go buy a lottery ticket, which I don't like to think of cards as a lottery ticket, but to some extent it is.
Yep.
I want a lottery ticket from the state of Texas or the United States.
Right.
I don't want a lottery ticket from an unregulated company, you know, from Ethiopia or, you know, the Sudan or some place where who knows if the game is straight or not. I mean, the thing for Leaf is Leaf sells about $20 million a year in cards now. So we have a big enough business that we're not going to take any risk on a relatively small launch.
Yeah.
And, I mean, really, like Best of Football is a relatively small launch for us. It's not a huge launch. So we're not going to do anything stupid and not keep an honest opportunity for customers because of the size of our business. And we have so much to lose because we're a decent-sized company. So it's not to say these other people aren't honorable, but what really backs up their products?
Right, exactly.
You know, really, what is behind it? And the fact is they're buying things in the marketplace the same as we are. So in some cases, I like to think I'm a better buyer than some of them, since some of them actually buy things for me to put in their products. You know, I've sold, like, parts of my personal collection to people, memorabilia that I have. You know, so I've sold people stuff, so I'm not talking them down anyway. But to me, if I'm going to go to a casino, I don't want to go to the one on Vegas Vacation where they ask you to pick a number 1 to 5, and no matter what you say, it's the one less or whatever, you know. Pick a number 1 to 3, 2. Oh, sorry, it was 3. Good try. Try again.
Yeah.
And that's – I want to go to a straight one. I want to go to MGM. I want to go to, I want to go to a real casino if I'm going to play.
Yeah.
And I think we provide – well, I don't want to compare us to a casino. I do want us to provide honest value that is consistent with knowing that you're playing a straight game, whatever the game is.
Sure.
It's kind of like when you get a redemption, a replacement from a company that's a 101. And you scratch your head and say, why wasn't that in the product?
Right.
You know, if they were able to send it as a replacement, why the hell wasn't that in the product?
Yes.
We want those cards to be in the product because we want a straight game. And it's just, the thing is, when you see a Leaf box break online, you don't always see huge cards coming out every time. You see some of the dud boxes, too. But you know what? A lot of these companies that you're referring to, it's amazing how all the early box breaks are awesome.
Yes.
And they're all awesome. And I'm like, oh, my, it's kind of like the old days of Beckett. It was amazing. They're exquisite boxes were the best boxes I saw all year. the one year the Peterson 101 rookie came out of their box spring. You know,
right.
Exquisite football. So I mean, you see things like that, and you like scratch your head. We don't play like that.
Or like the biggest hit of the product wasn't pulled until there was like one case left of the product.
Well, and that's the thing, and that's just horseshit. I'm sorry about that. We have products that, like one of our poker products, the Stu Unger Cut, we've never seen it.
Yeah.
It still, 5 years later, has not pitched its head up. And that's just, it's unbelievable. That product's gone. I don't know where one case is, but the card never showed up anywhere. It's out there because I own every Stu Unger Cut that was ever made, and it came out of my personal collection. I know it was made.
Nice.
There, I mean, I had four of them, and that's one of my four.
Now,
so, I mean, I know it's out there, but it's never been found. So,
right.
You know, you hear that all the time.
Now, one of the things that I thought was genius with Best of Football was the elimination of the cases. Because, ever so often we'd bust a case, and, you know, of Best of Baseball, for example, and somebody would pull, you know, a Robin Yount, $1,000 Robin Yount, and they go, well, I don't want to buy the rest of the case. Was that kind of the thought process, and is that going to go forward with some of your other Best of products that they're not going to be in cases?
I'm going to tell you, we polarize people on the boxes and cases of the Best of products. My thought process was, A, allow people to buy what they need.
Yeah.
So when you buy direct, if you can only sell four boxes in your store, you shouldn't have to buy six.
Right.
You should be able to buy four. I thought it was an interesting experiment. That's part one. Part two is these best ofs have a high risk, high reward. So when you opened a three-box case, let's say your best card was $150.
Right.
And the boxes cost you over $200. You felt abused because your case didn't have a case hit.
Right.
But the thing is, we didn't make it a 12-box case, so we could have insured that. We made it a three-box case, so it could be affordable, and you could have a sealed case where you know the boxes are fresh and untampered.
Right.
But the case hit thing is what really inspired me to do that, because I was like, you know what? I don't want there to be an expectation of a case hit.
Yes.
All the hits are in there, and that's great. You know, let's do it as boxes. Overwhelmingly, customers wanted cases. Because there are people on the marketplace who are unscrupulous, and they tamper with boxes. You know, I know some of the people on eBay who do that, who we've gone after them, you know, legally and done other things to help protect the market.
Right.
But that happens a lot. So we would – I feel like ultimately we had to provide a case experience if possible to our customers to protect them at the very least. But you have to go into an understanding that there's a randomized element to it. Well, the best card in your case may only be 100, but you may not have one box in the case where you hit a card bigger than what the box was.
Right.
But there's so much nosebleed upside that if you're okay with that risk profile – it's fun because you never know what's coming out. That's what's always been appealing about that product.
Yeah, no, it's they've been great. And, you know, I wanted to get into this, and I want to preface it for everybody that's listening. Everybody probably knows about, you know, the summit, but I wanted to give everybody a background that maybe doesn't know that, you know, Leaf and yourself are not allowed to attend the summit, and maybe people don't know the reasons. But I wanted to know if there was any updates on that, if you're privy to say to us and let everybody know.
Yeah, no, I think basically, you know, last year I gave a speech at the summit, and I laid it out there, the truth about the industry, looking behind the curtain like the Great Wizard of Oz.
Which is a hilarious video, by the way, if you haven't seen it.
Thank you. It's on YouTube. It's had a lot of hits. But, I mean, if you see it, I pimp our products for about 30 minutes like all the other companies. But then at the end of the day, I was like, you know what, even though I paid for this time to present to you, I wanted to pretty much give people a chance to ask any question. And unlike the corporate BS answers they're used to, I gave them the answer. And unfortunately, you know, or fortunately, depending how you look at it, you know, it was a standing ovation, standing room only at 8 in the morning.
Yeah.
And a standing ovation at the end. People were pumped that I laid it out there and didn't sugarcoat it. And you know what the problem is? A lot of people like a doctor with better bedside manner. And in this case, a lot of people were my competing manufacturers and the licensors, who really should feel convicted and condemned by what I said, because I meant every word I said. The licensors take too much money off the top, and the manufacturers are too big and bloated to really deliver the value they need to.
Right.
They need to be lean, mean fighting machines. And the redemption process has to get streamlined. I could go over all the problems of the industry. Your customers know them already. They're not stupid. You know, they know all the problems and the things that drive them nuts about this business. And I basically called out and said, these things can be fixed. Fake patches, we've got a patch database on our website where you can go look at our pool host, Malone, Ewing, to check your patch and make sure the right patch is in there. If you're not sure, now Trinity doesn't because they're not game-worn patches, they're player-worn.
Right.
But all game-worn patches have a database. So, boom, you got a database to help deal with that. Redemptions, they're boring and tiresome to sit and enter on the website. boom, we made a website that makes it more fun to enter. A little rock music video in the beginning.
Yep.
A little virtual pack pops up and opens and you see it. So we gave you, we try to address all the problems of the industry with our little microcosm of answers that we hope is contagious.
Yeah.
When we presented that, our competitors, some competitors, we don't say which ones, but some competitors, and at least one licensor obviously didn't like it that we called them out. They bullied the industry summit, in our opinion and belief, to keep us out of the show, threatening to pull out if we were allowed to do it. Obviously, the promoter of the event, you know, has an event that won't last very long if, you know, if they lose a couple of top people, and so they were scared. So they did whatever they had to do. You know, it's illegal, but, you know, they made decisions they felt like they needed to survive. And so ultimately, we were told we weren't welcome anymore. We'd already paid. We'd already paid and had a contract with them.
Mm-hmm.
They basically refunded our money and said, you're not welcome anymore. And so honestly, I thought, you know what? The consumer is the one getting hurt here. That sucks. You know, the dealer is getting hurt because they're not getting the truth. They're getting the same whitewash crap they've sucked down the last 10 years at this thing. So you know what? We're going to sue them, not because we have to do this show. It's going to hurt our – will it hurt our company? I believe it will, because we want our customers to know we care about them and we're out there. And there may be customers who aren't aware of the issues and who think Leaf just doesn't care, and that's why we're not there. But, you know, more and more I hope people do know that, you know, we do care about the business, which is why we're willing to take – you know, take this behavior and say, you know what, we'd rather spend the resources on giveaways that we would have given away, spend those resources going after and exposing naughty behavior on behalf of the promoter and other people.
Sure.
And, you know, we'd rather expose that behavior, get it out there, and I think when people find out the facts of what happened behind the scenes, some companies they buy product from have been involved in this, and I think it's going to look very, very poor for them. I think it's going to look, first off, it's going to show how scared and threatened they are of what my little company has done. But beyond that, people are going to see it as bullying. It's the same kind of crap that's made the products worse and worse.
Yes, absolutely.
You know, exclusive deals to try to wipe out competitors so they can make more money on products, and it's just shady crap.
Yeah,
I agree. And that's what I exposed, and it's still going on. And so guess what? This year, instead of going to the summit, I'm going to stay home. I'm going to keep working my products, and I'm going to keep kicking these guys' ass. And that's pretty much it. I'm going to kick their ass, and at the end of the day, I don't need to go to a summit to show you that I can dominate you. If you're too big and bloated, I will take advantage of your weaknesses.
Right.
And these companies, I think they've been put on notice in the past, and I'm constantly kicking their ass because my products are performing when some of these other products are highly suspect.
Right. I can't remember any of your products that went down this year as opposed to like a Sterling product or a museum or something like that. Everything from top that kind of went down, unfortunately.
Well, some of those are wicked.
Your stuff went up, you know, so.
Well, we've had a couple other shakier, but, I mean, they're not disasters generally. And that's the thing. They're not disasters. And there are some disasters in other categories. And granted, some of these companies do a great job with some stuff. They really do. One of the companies is amazing at social media. The other one has a great brand that has such a legacy, they can almost do no wrong. But they both have glaring weaknesses that will be the death of this industry if people don't start forcing them to address them. And that's why I spoke out last year. And from the summit this year, even though I won't be there, my plan at the moment is to do nightly online live presentations covering the topics presented at the summit.
Nice.
With a no BS, you know, here's where we're at. Here's what you heard today. And here's what it really means, and here's what they should have said. And so we plan on addressing that in our own form, online, streaming, and we're working on the ability to take live questions so that we can give people a real summit experience, even if you're not at the summit,
yeah,
from a company that will tell the truth and will lay it out there and is not there just to pimp themselves and to, you know, to promote.
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, we wish you were there, but this is actually maybe better to focus on your products, and I like the idea of having that, you know, that interview session, and, you know, we'll definitely promote links to that, and if anybody has any questions or something, we'll help participate in that, because we're all for somebody who's doing things the right way and adding value to the customer. I mean, same thing when we do our breaks. We don't touch certain products because there's no value there. But everything that you guys have made, from the jerseys to the helmets to the best ofs, everybody loves it, and everybody walks away happy, and they don't feel – we don't hear the word skunk when you're dealing with a Leaf product like you
– not very often. That's for dang sure.
You know. And for those of you guys listening out there, I'm not just, you know, sugarcoating this. This is, you know our show. We're not going to sugarcoat anything. As you heard when we talked about Topps Magic last week, we went on a rant on how terrible that product was. So we're not just having Brian on here to, puff smoke or anything, and we got a lot of Leaf products. We're speaking from the heart here on, these products have been game-changing as of, with everything that's been coming out. So
no question.
So, the Damian Lillard situation, I know you had the exclusive and then Panini, was able to get Damian Lillard. Who approached who, if you're privy to say, and how did that kind of deal work out?
Well, here's what I can tell you. We have Damian Lillard exclusive. And damn, I'll tell you, one of my biggest flaws as a person, okay, is that I do what is right for things I care about. Okay? I don't like exclusives.
Yeah.
And the fact is, the only reason I got the player exclusive in the first place was because the other company did not put any value on him and thought he was worthless.
Right.
And they made him an offer that basically said, you are not worth anything. And so I recognized that this personality was, I recognized that this player had major potential. You had to look past where he went to school and that there was something there.
I was going to say, do you have a high-profile scout on the payroll with the Puig and the Abreu and the Lillard situation? Or
No, but to be honest with you, we just knew. And it sounds funny, and you'll say, oh, that's a bunch of hogwash. You didn't know anything. And you know what? To the extent that what do they say? I think there's an expression about history is told by the victors. When it works out, however you say it worked out, is how it went down. But I like to think that we knew that a guy, it's kind of like when Dirk Nowitzki was taken the Mavs, 8 or 9.
Mm-hmm.
You don't take players, 18-year-olds from Germany no one's ever heard of unless you know something.
Right.
You just don't do it. And you don't take a kid from Weber State at number 7 or 6, whatever it was. You don't take a guy like that unless you're sure. Because there are some good players on the draft.
Absolutely.
You don't take a guy like that unless you know. We'd seen the kid play. We knew the kid could play, no question. And we were right. I could have easily been wrong. Guess what? I offered Anthony Davis $500,000 that year. I offered Kid Gilchrist $400,000 that year. Got turned down, thank God. What if Michael Kid Gilchrist had been my guy?
Right.
I look like the biggest moron on the face of the earth. It's like when I signed Tim Beckham to exclusive in 2008 with Razor. I look like the biggest monkey ever. I mean, that I signed that guy. People, if you look back, you would say, what? At the time, it was like, oh, my God, he took the number one pick in the baseball draft away from Tops. But looking back, it's like, what was that guy thinking? So, yes, I look like a genius because I hit the right guy. Could have just as easily missed. Could have been a whiff very easily. With that being said, exclusives are bad for the industry. I do. I think they're bad. Now, are we forced to fight fire with fire? Yes. If someone brings guns to a fight, you don't fight with your fist. Because even if you're great, you're going to lose.
Right.
So we'll load up our guns and use the same kind of weapons our opponents are using. But we would sign something today if all the companies would agree not to do exclusives. We would absolutely participate.
Yeah, and you actually said that. You said that on the Epic Summit thing last year. That was one
of
your points.
That's right. I would gladly never do another exclusive. But the problem is, people who are fighting with all they have is big guns and no real bite. They can't do it without artificial assistance. They're going to want to keep using the guns because in a fist fight they're not going to win.
Right.
They need money or guns or whatever these guys have at the next level up. They're going to need that to win the fight. So they're going to keep doing exclusives forever, even though it's against the interest of the industry. But what kind of hypocrite am I if I stand up on the stage and say I hate exclusives, but then I corner the best, rookie in the basketball draft? So I said, I am prepared to sell some autographs to Panini if, I think it's the best thing for the business and if they're willing to pay a fair price. And they paid a fair price.
Good.
And so I think it was the right thing to do for the industry and the collector.
Definitely.
Would I have been able to beat my chest harder if I said, screw you, Flawless doesn't have Lillard, I am an Annie Boo Boo? I could have done that. But it wouldn't be the right thing for the collector. There were collectors who wanted to see him in a Portland Trailblazer uniform.
Right.
So, listen, I can either screw the collector over for my own benefit, or I can do what's right for the collector. And, yes, there may be a few people that say, hey, why'd you do that? We thought he was Leaf exclusive. That's not ideal, but at the end of the day, the right thing was to take care of the collector, and we think we did that. And I'll stand by the fact that, there were some cool cards they came out with, and I think they learned this last year not to mess with me because they signed every football player exclusive. I mean, every basketball player exclusive. They didn't leave one player. They signed every lottery pick exclusive, so I couldn't get any of them. Because I think they were scared if they missed one, that would be the one that would hit, and it'd be mine. So, guess what? You know, like I said, they had to bring bigger guns to the fight.
And
because if I with equal guns, I'm going to win.
Right, yeah. And yeah, it shows. I mean, Damian Lillard's probably one of the hardest. I mean, that guy, I think, did everything but actually sell merchandise at the All-Star weekend this weekend. So, I mean, that shows the guy's work ethic. So.
Well, you heard the sixth of it. He actually led a rap competition.
Oh, wow.
They put on a rap
that.
Contest there. He's, oh, he can rap, too. So,
wow.
I mean, Damian Lillard's more than an athlete. But with that being said, listen, you know, we just try to do our best. The kid's great. I'm so glad we've worked with him. We still have him under contract for another year. You know, I think Panini probably has exhausted much of their autograph inventory. You know, if they came back to me now and asked for more, I would probably sell it to them. I thought it was in the best interest of collectors. But again, we're just going to keep making the best products we can and, you know, certainly hope that, you know, that we don't have to get into fights with other companies and it doesn't come down to everyone being exclusive because it's bad for the business.
Now, I know you're, you know, you're like a Jamaican working with five jobs, so I appreciate the time. We have a few more questions we want to ask you. We have our one-word answer segment that we usually ask people, and basically I'm just going to name a subject, and I want to hear what your thoughts are on it. I'm going to start with tops.
One-word answers.
Or, you know, it could be two if we need to get creative here.
If we have to stretch. Okay, yeah. One-word answer. Tops, I would say, is content. I think they're happy with what they've done. They don't feel the need to go way, way crazy. But they, you know, they got a great brand. So they're content. I think they're happy with where they're at. And they're for sale. So that's the other one is for sale.
Right, right.
You know, yeah. I hear rumors that Topps is trying to sell their card business. So I guess that's the other one is for sale. Content and for sale.
How about Manziel?
Favre.
Nice.
I think he's Brett Favre. I think he's either going to be massive high ceiling. There's some risk there. But I think if he's great, he's Brett Favre. If he's not, then that would not be ideal. But I think he's got what it takes. He's for real.
Panini.
I'm biting my tongue. No. For Panini, no. Panini, I would say fixable. Because that's the one-word answer, but I'm going to clarify. I think there's a few things they do really well. It will never happen, so don't get your hopes up. But I do believe if you let me loose there for about 1 year, there would be no other card companies left in the business. I mean, I'm not being funny.
Yeah.
I think I could deliver so much value and renovate that business and make it sustainable.
Yeah, I agree.
I think I could fix that company, but you're not going to see it because they don't like me. And I'm pretty happy doing what I'm doing. So you're not going to see it, but I think they're fixable. I think fixable would be the word I'd pick for them. But they're doing some things okay. They've turned the corner, but there's a lot of work to do still, obviously.
I agree. I agree completely. How about Tanaka?
Tanaka. Not Darvish. I like Tanaka. He's got upside, but, I mean, when I heard he couldn't run four laps, that made me a little nervous.
Oh, wow.
That made me a little bit nervous. But, again, there's not going to be another Darvish probably. The same way in golf, there's not going to be another Tiger. So if you think Tanaka is going to be the save-all of the industry, I got a bunch of other ones I can read back to you who are going to be the save-alls of the industry and did or didn't.
Well, I heard he's charging. Rumors are he's charging a ton for an autograph, so it's going to be interesting to see what happens.
Believe it, and he's probably worth it because the Japanese demand is huge. And I would love to do a deal with a guy.
Yeah.
But it's high risk, high reward, and I think Darvish is a once in a whatever Japanese import pitcher. You can't expect every guy to be like that.
Right, right. And, you know, Ryan wanted me to ask you, are you guys doing any more plans for poker? Any more poker products coming out in the future?
You know, it's a tough one because I think that market is too small.
Yeah.
What I would like to do is maybe introduce some poker players into some of our multi-sport offerings. And continue to dig up rare autographs and maybe some of our cut signature items. But I think a poker standalone at this stage doesn't make a lot of sense. I just think it's, you know, as a category, it's just too small. There are people that question if golf or tennis are big enough categories, and they're massive sports relative to poker. So I just think poker is a little too narrow. It's on the same level as doing movie cards for a movie, and we have not had great luck in that category yet. You know, our movie products have left a little bit to be desired in the marketplace, not because we didn't make great products, but because the nature of the beast is just a small market. So for us, we're probably going to stay away from that category. unless there's a massive shift to online legalization of poker and it becomes like it was, I think that's the only reason to do something that substantial.
And my final question, I mean, we've been talking about this. We think that 2014, as you mentioned before, the football class is so good, but I think you guys are excelling even on a down year of football. You know, as far as there's, you know, it wasn't as desirable quarterbacks as there's going to be this year. We almost refer to it as like we're thinking like with the Topps and Panini thing, they're going to be putting a Band-Aid on it because they're going to sell Manziel if he's on a piece of concrete. What do you think 2014 industry as a whole as far as growth?
The industry as a whole on growth. I think we turned the corner. We've come out of a tough time here. The market's been tough because there's been some overproduction issue. There's been a number of issues. And I think we're coming out of a lull in the card market, a period of some difficulties for the market in general. But the good news is I see the light at the end of the tunnel. I really do. I actually believe that the market this year is going to be much stronger than last year. And I think we will look back and say, you know what? 13 football did a lot of harm to the industry.
Mm-hmm.
And then 14 football could save it. But again, it's what I said earlier. These companies are going to have to really be careful. Because the tendency is going to be to try to make a shitload of money. Sorry about the language.
Yeah, no,
to make a
no censor on this
make,
show, so go ahead.
They're going to try to make a shitload of money maybe, and they can't do that. They've got to be smart, make collectible items that leave money on the table, let the consumer finally win. And if you do that, you're going to win back people in droves. Because Manziel has the potential to be, and you're going to laugh your ass off at me, the LeBron James of football. In that,
yep.
He is perfectly charismatic. He's flashy. He's cocky. He's all the things that a superstar has to be. If the play backs it up, he could be the game changer in football. So we have a chance. But if we get greedy, you know, then it's going to ruin a perfectly good thing. So I hope that they show some prudence and some willpower and don't just go totally bananas.
Well, and we're excited about it. You guys are the first out of the gate, and I think, I mean, if you guys haven't either pre-ordered any of this product, you guys listening out there, any of the Leaf Metal that's coming out, I mean, this stuff is going to dry up quick, and the box prices are going to skyrocket. I mean, this is going to be such a desired product, and your guys' technology on this stuff is amazing. I mean, it's going to be a phenomenal product. And now that that's great, you have the checklist out, so for those that are doing group breaks can do a sell-per-player type thing, which a lot of these companies don't even put out checklists even remotely close to a release. It's usually a couple days after, and we're left scratching our heads. How are we going to sell this team or this slot or who's on the checklist? So being that that's going to come out and you guys already have in concrete who's going to be in there, this stuff's going to fly. So we're looking forward to that.
Got it. Yeah, we're hoping we deliver. That's the plan. I think we've done it.
I think you will. We're all confident in what I mean. The jerseys that we've done, the helmets we've done. I mean, you compare your helmets to TriStar. I mean, TriStar can't even hold the jock when it comes to a mini helmet. I mean, they just can't get the people to sign that you guys have signed. It's like some of these guys, these old Dallas Cowboy guys, no one wants them. You know, so you guys have done the due diligence of finding guys that collectors want, and that shows in your product. So, you know, from all of us at Mojo Break and Sports Card Radio, we just applaud Leaf for what you guys have done. And, you know, making everybody else hopefully realize this is what the model should be to make a successful product.
That's the game plan. And I think we've done our part. Now let's let the market do its part. And if we fall short for some reason, we always encourage collectors to talk to us and say, we would like this better. This was great. We also like it when they tell us great things. But we like it when they give us constructive criticism, too. And that's how we build on what we've started here.
Sure. Now, Brian, is there anything else you'd like to say or promote, anything coming out that you'd like to get out there for everybody listening?
Not really. I mean, again, we bought the Famous Fabrics brand at the end of the year. Big Apple Baseball is the first Famous Fabrics product coming out. We've cut the factory cost that they were going to use so that we could get it down to a more affordable, safer level. And so you're going to see a lot of unusual stuff coming out, stuff that's not traditionally the kind of items we'd make, but you know, that acquisition allows us to take what they were doing and do it better. And I think that there are some very creative things that were happening at Famous Fabrics. And we think we can take those things, integrate them into our program, and add a bunch of exciting releases with the kind of fun that you've come to expect, you know, from Leaf products.
Nice. Well, and, you know, if you're not already following, follow @leaf_cards on Twitter. Check their website, any of their updates. You can see their products on our website, mojobreak.com. Like to thank you again, Brian, for the time. Awesome interview. It's going to be some great content for our listeners out there, and kind of gives a nice preview of stuff that's coming out from you guys.
You got it. Sounds like a plan. I appreciate it, and thanks for your support, guys. I really do appreciate it.
Thanks again, Brian. Take care.
You got it. A pleasure. Thanks. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
What an interview. Good stuff.
BG telling it like it is right there.
Just doing it real. Man, that was some killer questions right there. Some in-detailed conversation about the industry. Kind of a no-holds-barred right there. I loved it. That was good stuff.
Yeah, I think it's interesting that he's going to hold his own, I guess, apparently his own Leaf summit on maybe a Ustream or some kind of video service where that should be actually incredibly entertaining. That's one thing I got out of it that I'm definitely looking forward to that. And his products, too. His products sound interesting as well.
That repackaged product where it's the sealed boxes is extremely intriguing. There's something about that's going to be pretty exciting for everybody involved, not only distributors, you know, group breakers, the end user, end consumer. It's going to be amazing. That's something that nobody has done yet, and that's going to be a fun product to open up and a fun product to see how it takes off and see what the secondary market does on it.
Yeah, I actually had a switchboard failure. I was talking. I'm glad you guys picked me up on that one because
I figured.
No, I was saying that I loved his Chevy Chase reference because, you know, we always talk about that movie. I thought that was hilarious.
Yeah, I actually I'm really glad that I stayed on because I was about ready to go. You know what? These guys pretty much got it. I'm gonna go in and get some dinner right now. But good that I stayed on. Helping out with Ryan.
yeah, that was.
We'd left Ryan out there to dry.
Yeah. Well, you know, we had some nice point of views from the chat, and you know, like I said, you know, during the interview, you know, I'm not like Leaf didn't pay for a spot or anything like that. It's just that we've had a lot of success with their products lately, and you know, we can't seem to hold their products on the shelves, and everybody's just amazed by the value. So that's kind of where we went with that, and that's why we, you know, praised him for what he's been doing. Not saying we're not going to do Panini anymore, we're not going to do Tops anymore. I just think with a lower print run, that's why he's so successful with his products. So,
just got hooked up with some tickets to Ice Cube tonight. What's up? Bringing it back
nice.
Old school.
Sweet. Wow. Brittany and Ice Cube. Dang.
Ice Cube is in a West Side Connection, right?
He was, yep.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about.
Old school, yeah, with Max Tan and Dub C. It's my hip hop knowledge for the day.
Oh, you were in that group?
No, Dub C.
Oh.
WC. Not
Doug C.
If I was in that group, I don't think I'd be here today. You know, so. Probably be out there hanging out with Ice Cube in Vegas.
Sweet.
So, but yeah, I thought it was, yeah, it was to the point. I mean, interesting point of view on the summit from him. And you know, he says it like it is. I mean, maybe that's one of the benefits for him as being, you know, control, doing what he does with Leaf is he can say how it is and he can make the products the way that he wants. I think that's the benefit for him.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, that was a great interview. Like I said before, that was a great interview. Like, I mean, he liked talking. That was an easy interview for you.
Yeah, exactly.
You just, I mean, what'd you answer? Like, but ask like 8 questions, and he went off for about an hour. That was
yeah,
good stuff.
I love talking.
He's like, it's like an interviewer's wet dream.
When I love talking, it was hard for me to keep my mouth shut. I think I had to like chew some gum or something. No, but I mean, it was all good content, and people would rather hear his voice rather than mine anyway. So, you know, it went well that way.
Good stuff.
So, but I probably got to let you go to get your Britney Spears, so me and maybe me and Ryan will close out the show, huh?
All right. Sounds good.
All right. All right, Dan. Talk to you later.
Have fun, Dan.
Later. All right. Will do. Later, guys.
So cool. I mean, what did you, any insights on any of the stuff he said, Ryan, that, you know, you were thinking while he was talking about some of those industry things?
There's a lot of insights because he's a mile a minute. He's a mile a minute. You know, I think one thing that stood out for a couple things is the regarding the summit and how he talked about there's going to be some facts coming out and so forth, probably to do with the lawsuit, how he kind of got bullied. And I think reading between the lines, Tops, as you know, Doug, doesn't do a whole lot there at the summit. They don't even have, like, a corporate presentation. So when he's saying that he's being bullied out of the summit, he's really talking about Panini and Isaacson, from my perspective, because Panini does a lot. They have a huge corporate presentation. They do the black boxes. They, you know, really try to control the message there. So, you know, that's really kind of sad that he, not only he, got kind of bullied out of the summit. I don't know what his exact words were, but kind of, you know, banned from the summit. ITG recently came out with an open letter where they can't go to the summit. Of course, I can't go to the summit either, but, you know, they're on a much bigger scale than I am. I mean, like he said, he's almost a $20 million company. It's obvious that these guys feel really threatened by him. Whether it's his personality or some of his business moves, obviously you touched on the thing with Lillard, how he really just hit a home run. What if he signed, like you said, what if he signed Kid Gilchrist for $400,000 or whatever he said? He would have looked like a fool. So he got lucky, you know, in that respect. But they obviously feel really threatened from him. You look at some of the comments that a former employee, Mark Sabir, on Tops has kind of directed at him. And I just kind of sit back and wonder, like, why are you worried about a guy doing less than $20 million in business?
Right.
You know, for Brian Gray, that's great. But from Tops' perspective, that's nothing. Like, that is, you know, that's nothing. So, I don't know. I think a lot of things were interesting. The fact that he's going to do something after the summit is going to be just total corporate BS.
Yeah.
You know, it's just going to be absolute controlled message, corporate BS. They've kept all the people out that might say something controversial or basically, essentially the truth. So the fact that he's going to go on some kind of video streaming service afterwards and talk about this and really tell the truth, that's going to be really beneficial. They're going to be a lot more interested in that than what goes on at the summit, because it's just going to be the same kind of controlled stuff that you always see out of these companies, and they're not bending over backwards like it appears Brian Gray does sometimes to provide this type of value. You know, he's the type of guy you want in this industry. You know, I don't care if people don't like his attitude, or he's the type of guy that we want, because it does seem like he cares, regardless of what you feel about his cards or his attitude. It feels like he actually cares about the industry. He cares about the collectors. He wants people to, and he, of course, he loves money, and he wants to run a business too, of course. But I don't know, Doug. Did you get that sense too? That he is a guy that really is passionate, and he does, this is his life, you know, in a sense.
Yeah, I got that from him. I mean, yeah, and he obviously is very passionate about his own business. But he also, I mean, if you listen in the interview, he also does care about the industry, too. He at the end of the interview, he started saying, you know, 2014, and he didn't just speak of Leaf. He talked about everybody. So he wants to see these guys succeed in a sense, too. Obviously, he probably wants to be, you know, the top dog, which, you know, anybody that runs a business would want to be. But I truly see that he, you know, is genuine about wanting value and wanting to see value out of other companies, because, you know, if there wasn't any other companies, Leaf probably, I mean, they'd still be making products, but your competition makes your products better. So he wants to see these guys make some changes, and I think it creates a bigger piece of the pie for everybody, and there's less complaining and stuff like that. So you can see that his passion, he doesn't want to be the only guy. He wants to possibly be the top guy, but he wants to see industry changes, and that was what his industry summit presentation was last year.
I didn't even think that it was that bad, to be honest, his presentation from last year. But
no, I mean, it was pretty much no different from what we just had him on. I mean, he kind of said the same things about, you know, and it's all glaring things that, you know, this industry, the redemptions and the things like that. And he's basically seen what collectors have complained about on forums about the redemption process, about the value in the boxes. And he's used that to his advantage to make the products better, his products, that is. So he's saying, you know, why don't you guys as companies take what I, you know, why don't you guys fix this problem? Why are you letting me fix all the problems? And that's what it was kind of basically saying within its speech last year. At least that's what I got out of it.
I thought he was telling the truth.
I agree. I was going to say that too. I believe that he was telling the truth. Yeah, it's not like he came out there and said,
why he got kicked out.
Yeah. It's not like he went out there and said, Upper Deck is stealing your money or something. You know, or Topps is stealing your money, or Topps making fake cards. He didn't say that. He just, you know, pretty much went over all the problems that we talk week in and week out about on this show anyway. So he was on stage at the summit, and obviously somebody didn't like it. I don't know who that is, or like you said, it could be Panini. It could, you know, I don't. It could have been any Panini. It sounds like it makes a lot of sense, but you know, it's crazy.
It is. I don't know. He admits what his sales are, and
yeah,
believe me, $20 million is nothing to Topps and what Panini does. I mean, the rumors are Panini's going to get sold for like $1 billion. So
wow,
$1 billion. So $20 million is nothing, you know, compared to even their sports, even the American sports cards probably. You know, it does over $100 million in revenue, I'm sure. So they're ten times the size of what Leaf is. So I think they could work with them. That was the interesting thing he said is when he said, "Boy, I could go in there and clean up Panini and make it fix it and you know and those things." That was really interesting.
I'd be curious to. Which speaks to Panini's customer service. I think that's kind of what he's pointing at. And, you know, Panini has taken steps that Topps hasn't done with their customer service and replacing redemptions and stuff like that. So maybe that's what he was alluding to. Is that what you're thinking too?
I think the products the fact that they're well-funded. I might drop here in a sec because I'm running low on Skype credit, but I'll switch over to my phone. But, I don't know. I think it was more of the products that he was referring that, you know, they have a huge opportunity. They got exclusive in the NBA. They're in the NFL. They have a little deal over there with the players in the baseball. So, I think, like you said, it's fixable. They really spend a lot of money in, I think, wasteful kind of ways. I don't know if he agrees with that. That's just kind of where I'm taking it. But,
yeah.
Really interesting though. I think the whole thing was really interesting. He's very honest. Which I appreciate because if you call these guys at Topps or Panini, they're just gonna give you kind of the company line. And not that Brian didn't do that occasionally. You know, he was slipping in the company line, but he's way more straightforward and honest than most of these guys that you talk to around the industry. So, I don't know. That's something that I appreciate.
He
doesn't sugarcoat it most of the time.
He doesn't, yeah. I mean, and I kind of talked to him before. I said, you know, this is going to be no holds barred. You know, say whatever you feel. And he was, you know, he didn't say he couldn't talk about anything. And I didn't – that was another thing. I didn't even send him any of these questions. So he came in completely blind to what I was going to say. So, he definitely spoke all that on the fly – But I think what you really see with Brian and his company is you see, and I talk about this all the time, is passion. Like he said with the autographs, he doesn't sign certain guys because he knows there's not going to be value to the collector. These big companies, they make good products, they make bad products, but I think it's too diluted that they don't have the passion there to realize that this guy is not going to be worth anything. Why are we signing him for $50? You know what I'm saying? So it breaks down to a lack of passion. So I got you back over there.
Yeah, I'm with you. Yep.
Okay. Yeah, I think what it is it's passion is what I said, is that it's a lack of passion between these companies, and whoever's acquiring the autographs is just doing what they're told. They don't look and they don't research the market that, you know, this guy's not going to sell. Like Cody Ross and Pastime. No one wants a Cody Ross auto. Why acquire any Cody Ross's autos? For Panini, for example, Topps has kind of the same guys. Like no one wants this backup fullback or something like that. So why are you paying the money to sign him? He looks at the market, and I think even with the license, which does restrict them because they have to pay so much for the license, and that's why Brian's able to put more value because he doesn't have a license, I think there's ways to change it to add the value to the better autograph signers that may not cost that much but don't have an auto in 10 years or whatever. So.
Right. Yeah. It seems like he puts real thought into products, and these other card companies, they either don't have time or it's really not a true priority because they know they have some baked in sales, you know, in some respects. So, I think the tribute checklist just came out today. And,
yeah.
You know, if you're pre-ordering that product, you had to buy that a long time ago. They could have put anybody they wanted in that. You know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly.
So,
and maybe he hit it on the head by saying they're content because they literally don't have to worry about who they put out. It's going to sell. So it's almost like they need a release to not sell once, and then they can go, oh, wow, well, we need to do something.
Right.
So, but where Brian is kind of like, I don't want to say the startup company because he's probably third on the, well, maybe fourth. He might have taken over Upper Deck. He knows that he has to put value because he's already behind the game without the license. I think it's becoming a point now where the license doesn't seem to matter for a lot of collectors, so the tides are changing. But he knows he has that challenge to overcome from the get-go. So he knows he needs to put value, whether Topps is just, it's like a parking lot or something. They know that there's going to be people parking and they're going to pay $30 per spot. You know, it's not like they need to make any changes or plant any flowers there to make the parking lot look nicer. They're just going to let the money keep coming in because it's going to still come in. So until, you know, some of that changes, you know, we'll see.
Yeah. You know, that's a really good point. And at the end of the day, it might be kind of a smart business move to do that, which is horrible to say that, especially when you're talking about a collectible product. When you're talking about if you're talking about, you know, dish soap or, you know, just a regular consumer product, you know, yeah, you can go cheap and make a cheaper product because you have a stellar brand, you know?
Right.
And he mentioned the Topps brand, that's why they're content, because it's the most iconic brand. People who don't even know anything about baseball cards, they probably heard about Topps. At least, you know, that's something that maybe in their, in, you know, that they would recognize maybe the Topps brand, is where it's like Leaf or
Panini
or some other, even Upper Deck. That's a stretch to say that. So,
right.
They have a lot of baked, but and they don't have to provide the value.
And don't get me wrong, there's still value in their products. I just think it's
that's the business move.
Right, right.
That's the business. Is why bend over your back and provide this value? They got 20-year-old kids over there at Topps. So doing the product development for Bowman and all this stuff.
Yep.
you know, I'm not saying those kids don't know what they're doing, but these are guys fresh out of college.
Yeah.
I wouldn't be prepared for a job like that, to be honest.
Right.
It's a collectibles kind of space like that, where you're really having to, like you said, provide value.
Right.
It's tough.
It's tough. I mean, yeah, it's very tough. And don't get me wrong, I'm not gonna not open Tops, or I'm not gonna not open Panini. It's just I think it's because of the pre-orders come in so heavy, they have to add autograph signers here and there, and the production run is so heavy that the stuff on the checklist is just really hard to hit. And that's what I just want to see it fine tuned. That's all. It's, you know, Tops is like the hottest waitress at Denny's, which isn't great. You know what I'm saying? It's like they need to progress higher than being the hottest waitress at Denny's or something. They need to move on to, you know, maybe Black Angus or something like that and add a little bit more value than you would get at Denny's or something. So it's like, yeah, it's, and I stole that from Doug Stanhope. So I can't get credit to that, but it just, you know, there's good things and there's bad things, and they can fine tune some things. And Brian Gray shows you what value he can deliver with a 300 box or a 200 box case run or whatever, a 250 case run. He can show you what value is put in there. Now, is Topps going to be able to do a 250 case run? Probably not. But instead of a 50,000 case run, maybe let's try to do 30,000 cases or 20,000 cases. And every box or every case is getting a card that somebody's going to feel happy about, and they didn't get hosed. That's the point. That's what I'm thinking.
Yeah, I honestly just don't see it happening.
Yeah,
with Tops, and that's just the honest truth. Unless somebody comes, a white knight comes in and buys it, that's just, it's not how they're going to run the business. And they're really going to, you know, I think Brian touched on it a little bit. They're going to be greedy with this football, and kind of get all their money back that they probably didn't really make that much with this 2013 product. So that's going to be, that's the, you know, I don't see it with Todd. I just see them milking their brand, which again is probably the right business move to do that. They could probably even offer less, especially with baseball. They could probably offer people less, and people would still buy it. You know, it's your only option.
Well, I can already tell you with the Bowman signatures, which is going to be the first football release from Topps, I'm already hearing from all these distributors that numbers are absolutely ridiculous. So does that mean there's going to be like a lot of seventh round undrafted guys? Probably. So,
right.
There's going to be five autographs a box, which is a decent value. But we, you know, the true test will, when that product comes out, we'll see where the Manziels are falling. How many people are getting Manziels? How many people are getting Clownies? Are they only making like 50 of those, and then they're going to water down with the rest of it? You know,
they're going to take the upper deck, you know, the 200, you know, like you mentioned with the upper deck football, is going to have 200 autographs. 90% of those are going to be worthless. Essentially worth, you know, whereas that top 20 guys that are really good, which is really good for this class. I mean, this class, like you said, is going to be really good, and there's going to be real opportunity. The products are going to be inherently better because of that. But like you said, I hate that they're going to get greedy on it, and that, you know, they're going to water down a whole bunch of guys, and then Manziel is going to be in that, you know, short print list, Sammy Watkins, you know, Borrell, the other quarterback. So, I don't know.
Well, and you know what, and not to take the opposite view here, it makes me wonder, because of the box prices dipping so low, their last three products have been drastically redesigned, meaning Sterling Tribute coming out tomorrow, Museum Collection Football was a new product, but they kind of, you expected it to be all rookie-based, and they didn't. So I wonder if they are getting some pressure from distributors that are holding boxes that drop down to $40 a box on a $70, you know, cost. And I wonder if this is a sign that they're changing maybe some of the design to make it a little bit more, I don't know. One could hope. Maybe I'm a glass half full and it's not going to change, but, you know, it seems like.
You could be right, actually, with football, because they've got to compete with Panini there. And Panini has kind of made some okay products in the last couple of years. So there's that direct competition there to where, like you said, the museum was good.
Actually, Triple Threads was good too, but it dropped. It still dropped it. But it, from a design point of view, from me, I thought it was good. It still, like I said, it still dropped because it was rookie based. But I think that they are getting some kind of heat. I think so. They're hearing a little bit of collectors, but I think who's really changing them are the distributors that are sitting on. I mean, Topps Prime Football I can get for $40 a box at this point, and it was a $70 presale, $80 presale a box. So, I mean, those guys are sitting on hordes of this stuff. So when that happens, when your number one buyer is sitting on all this product, then maybe the voices are heard. So maybe that will help change what's coming out. So, but actually, I gave away a spot on the chat, so I'm going to bring in 916. What's going on, 916?
Hey, what's going on, fellas? This is Big Chef.
Hey, what's going on, Shep?
Oh, just finally got a day off and getting to enjoy the show live. And great interview today with Brian. I like, if I could run a card company, I'd run it like him because he has the mindset of, hey, no one's going to stop me from doing what I want to do and giving back to the people that are giving money to him for his product.
Yep.
And that's the best way to do it, you know?
Yeah, I mean, that's why we've been jonesing to get him on the show. We just see it with all of his products, and you know, that was the main reason. Hey, we want to talk to Brian, and we know he's an entertaining interview, and that just kind of puts the cherry on top of the dessert there. So,
yeah, I hope he would go to the summit and maybe get a suite or something and give out dark gray boxes. And,
that'd be a great idea.
And hand those out to the collectors.
That's a good idea.
You guys do good work and keep everybody honest and you know, give us all insight on what's coming out and you know what I watch the breaks to figure out what to go pick up, and you guys do a really good job of that. Ryan with all of his research, and he likes to poke people, which is also entertaining.
Yep, definitely. Well, we got a nice. I'll go ahead and send you a $35 gift certificate for calling in, and you can, you know, use that on whatever you like on the site. And I know you're a big Royals guy, so maybe we'll find a Royal spot for you somewhere and hit you George Brett or something.
All right. Well, that's tremendous. Thank you again, guys, and you have a good evening.
All right, Chef. Sounds good, buddy. Thanks.
All right. Later.
Cool. Winner, winner. That was awesome. You guys in the chat were, you know, kind of talking about the Brian Gray interview, and you know, some of them were saying one brought up the point that they're on the fence about him because he kind of seems like he's, you know, spoiled and he can't get in, so he's crying about it, which I guess from an outsider point of view, I can see that as well.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's just he's got to be – if it's a summit, it's a trade show. It's kind of like if there was a cell phone show. I mean, you're not going to not have, like, T-Mobile or something. You're going to say they can't come in. So, you know, it's – he should be there, so – for reasons I don't know, you know, we don't know yet. Maybe that'll come out of the bag, but, you know, I think he's doing well with the news, because if somebody told me I couldn't come with my business, I got to think about my customers like that and think of what they think of me, you know. So that's what he's dealing with. I'm sure
right.
He is.
Yeah, I think people have different approaches. He has his more filing a lawsuit, very direct.
Yeah.
ITG guy who wrote an open letter.
Right.
You know, was much more mundane about it. Probably I'm more on the Brian Gray end. You know, I'll, you know, cock pump you. Both me and my brother. So, I people just have different approaches. And it's very important. Somebody like him, you know, I think it is important that he's there. Somebody like ITG, yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
Somebody like me, not so much. But those guys, yeah, because they're making these products. They're really involved in this stuff. You know, he's done $20 million in sales. People
right.
want to hear that. Like you said, his customers want to know that he cares. And some people who aren't following this are like, well, why wasn't Brian Gray? Why wasn't Leaf there? Oh, it was just the Panini show and the Upper Deck and the Top show. Oh, okay. Wow,
right.
That's interesting. You know, it looks, it reflects poorly, I think, on them. And, you know, we'll see what comes of it. I don't know.
We will. Yeah, unfortunately, we got 40 seconds left, so we'll probably reapproach this topic next week. But I think it was a great show, a good insight from Brian, and good point of view from you as well, Ryan. And, you know, we'll kind of follow this story as it gets closer to the summit, and be interesting to see what Brian does while he's, you know, doing this live streaming or what he's talking about for that. So that should be pretty entertaining. So for now, yeah, exactly. So, yeah. I got to watch that. I got to tune in. Hopefully he records it. Because so, if I'm in Vegas, I'm going to be out, you know, I probably won't remember doing. So I'm going to go ahead and hit the outro. Thank you guys for tuning in. Check out sportscardradio.com, mojobreak.com. We got tons of breaks going on tomorrow. Gold Standard, baseball, all kinds of stuff going on. So until next week, let me hit my outro. We'll see you guys next week. Take care. Peace.
Thank you for listening to another episode of Sports Card Live, sponsored by SportsCardRadio.com, MojoBreak.com. Check us out every Tuesday live at 4 p.m. Pacific, 7 Eastern, or download us on iTunes.